Hey everybody, welcome to the Baldies 2020 deliberations. This is us showing our work. You know, a lot of times the Oscars don't show, like, you know,
they never do
for what and why. They never do. And the Emmys is very opaque process. Insiders, we say fuck all that. This is just me and Jim arguing about stuff. However, it's kind of long and tedious. It takes a lot of time for us to duke it out and figure out what should be crowned for best Baldy of each year. So if you don't want to spend several hours watching us argue about what was good and bad about 2020, you just want to hear the winners, then yeah, go listen to the award ceremony. This is for the diehards, I guess, for the people that just like this kind of bonus content. We are going to be talking about some minor Baldy categories today, but some of the more fun ones. Biggest miss, which is defined as what thing Bald Move did not cover that probably should have for our own financial and popularity reasons.
Our own self-interest.
Best documentary and self-interest. Best documentary, that's pretty self-explanatory. Biggest surprise, these are the things that we didn't think much of or weren't even aware that kind of blew us away this year. And high risk versus high reward, things that, boy, seem like a big risk that no one had to undertake. You know, properties that were cold and dead that were tried to resurrect, sequels of successful standalone things, you know, sophomore albums, those kind of things. You know, you could have cashed out and you pushed all your chips back in. That's the things we're going to be talking about today. First up, biggest miss.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we can start by just, you know, since a lot of people listen to this in podcast form, reading by our lights what the biggest miss is. Now, we're going to be soliciting all this information from the viewers, from the listeners in an upcoming poll. But as we saw it, Plot Against America, Euphoria, Queen's Gambit, The Outsider, The Tiger King, I May Destroy You, The Good Lord Bird, and Tenet, the Christopher Nolan movie. Shall we go down here one by one and talk about like what these things might be and why we might have, you know, missed on them?
Yeah. So starting with, you know, just the first on our list, these are in no particular order at the moment. The Plot Against America, I have only seen the first episode of that. I keep meaning to get back to it, but it's one of those like heavy shows that you got to be in a certain mood to watch. And I just haven't, with all the shit that's been going down in this country at this point, it's never more timely, but also that makes me not want to watch it at the moment.
It actually might not be as timely now. You might have waited long enough to where, like, you know, the real things that hit you might not hit you is the same. But who knows? Because so just in case you didn't know, this is David Simon's latest miniseries project. Right. You know, if you don't know who David Simon is, he is a writer and showrunner for a lot of the best shows on television. The Wire,
The Deuce,
wrote Homicide, Life in the Streets, The Deuce, Show Me a Hero.
Tremé.
What's the hurricane? Tremaine, yeah. So he made a really thoughtful kind of take as a Jewish American on America's last flirt with fascism, which is this is kind of like an alternate history, but it's based on the premise of in the late 30s, I think, maybe early 40s. There is an election and you know, in our real world, FDR won, and you know, we lived our lives. But in this universe, his challenger, Charles Lindbergh, who was kind of like a Nazi sympathizer or non-intervention, like, you know, didn't want to get involved in war in Europe, won, and just a subtly different, like the influences that were already in America, what influences those emboldened and certain rhetoric amongst the different races and classes. It was really scary because it felt like we were going down a lot of tracks that way. And that was even before the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And closed off Canada's, because a lot of, you know, in this alternate history, a lot of American Jews. So I guess I should put my cards on the table. I watched this whole thing. I watched it months after it was released. Do you think it was a big miss for us? Because a lot of times these polarizing political things don't do well for us. The people that need to hear it don't watch it. The people that don't need to hear it watch it, and it just gets them all worked up, and maybe doomer.
And crucially, yeah. Like David Simon stuff is never that popular, you know, amongst the mainstream. So like, is it a big miss for us? Probably not. Like, it's not going to win this category. I can certainly say that. It's a miss personally because I really want to see it and I haven't yet, but no, as far as Bald Move goes, I don't think covering this would have gained us much of anything.
Yeah, I think that's right. Also, the other thing that must be said, the one reason that I didn't push for it is because it has an excellent companion podcast with David Simon himself being led in the discussion with Craig Mazin, the showrunner for the Chernobyl, who's a very sharp guy and knows a thing or two about making films. Very similar to, I guess, what he did with The Watchmen and Lindelof. And I feel like, man, when you got an official podcast like that and a self-evident story that's essentially, you know, it's self-contained argument. I just didn't feel like maybe there's a lot for us to say. And if we did do a show like this in the future, I think I would prefer to do it under Swizzbold, you know?
Yeah, we've got that entertainment channel on Swizzbold now, so.
Yeah, and some people will be like, well, why would you shunt it off on the sister thing if it's something political? And I'm like, I guess that's exactly why I would, you know?
Yeah.
Before all this Trump stuff started, we had a pretty diverse audience. Like, I don't think there was any people that were, like, particularly bloody-minded, but, you know, we had more conservative folks because some things like The Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, some of these action shows, Marvel stuff, does appeal to a very mainstream audience, and you do get, you know, conservatives on there. And honestly, I think we were better off when we could make passing comments on things that kind of hit you in the head with the media we were watching and not have to like just beat people over the head with a particular agenda like David Simon's want to do. And not that he's wrong with that, but like, I felt like we maybe were more effective at appealing to a broader type of person and taking them along, like nudging them rather than having to just like beat them. So like, yeah, I kind of want to segregate all that stuff off to Swizzbold because I would like to start attracting an audience that I can influence again. You know, but I don't know. Reasonably people could disagree with that strategy. Euphoria.
Well, before we jump onto Euphoria, let me add something to this list. And this might be controversial.
Uh-oh.
What do you think about Wonder Woman?
Okay, 84? Yeah, it's a good one to talk about. It's a good one to talk about, sure.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about it now or just work our way down to Euphoria?
Yeah, we'll get there. Yeah, let's do Euphoria.
So the reason, I mean, everyone says that Euphoria is a very kind of like insightful social piece, and a lot of people were comparing it to like Sharp Objects, I think. And it features Zendaya, which is this kind of like transcendental kind of like personality performer. And it's really well regarded. It's like, you know, talks about the problems of young people today. But that's about all I know. Everyone, I know that we got a lot of feedback asking if we were going to cover it or expressing disappointment that we weren't covering it.
I heard more about this in the lead up just because I was watching HBO at the time and they were putting the trailer for this on other things on HBO that I was watching. I heard like nobody really talking about this and saying, hey, you guys need to cover this. Are you going to cover that? Like maybe one or two, yeah. But not in the volume that we usually get on a more mainstream popular show.
Yeah. And I will say that like, I do feel like we missed it because it does seem like an interesting show and I do like that material. But yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, what they were showing me in the trailer where, you know, a kid says this is the greatest moment of anyone's life that's ever existed. I'm like, okay, this might not be up my alley.
That's the thing. Yeah, because like I think too, when sometimes people say like, oh, you know, this thing is very much like this other thing that you guys liked, so you probably will cover this. It's like I don't know, because like honestly, Sharp Objects got me because of like the small town feel, because I can relate to growing up in a small town. It like the difficult relationship with parents and kind of the abusive like expectations and things that like it was that kind of stuff that drew me into it, not like the necessarily coming of age kind of, because I didn't have that kind of childhood. I was squeaky clean growing up. I didn't have premarital sex. I wasn't doing drugs, wasn't drinking, you know, and my rebellion was intellectual. You know, reading Lord of the Rings and stories with ghosts and spiritism in it, playing Dungeons and Dragons and playing violent video games. It wasn't like literally raising hell and doing ecstasy and having a bunch of risky sex. So it's possible that I wouldn't, have a lot of personal, because I think that's what people like really like when our personal experiences organically elevate the coverage of the material. And I don't know if it would happen here, but maybe I should try it. The problem I get, I guess, is like the more Bald Move goes on, the more like each year I feel like, oh yeah, there's like five or six things I probably should put on my list and get to. And now it's just like, it's like every once in a while I'll get a Deadwood off the list and watch it, or like a Sopranos. Mm-hmm. I'm right now working on it, but there's so much of that just stacks up more and more every year that like, nah, I think I'm just going to go with like, the things that inherently interest me and fuck everything else. That's all I can do, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've pretty much come to terms with I'm never going to be able to watch all the television that I personally even want to watch, let alone the stuff that everybody thinks I should watch. So, yeah, I'll just go like, if it's personally interesting to me or I think it has like, you know, undeniable appeal to a broad audience that we should probably be covering, which... Euphoria and Plot Against America, neither of those do. Our next one probably does. Like, I heard more about the Queen's Gambit in the last 3 months than I have maybe a show since, like, in recent memory since, like, Tiger King, which is another one we'll be talking about on this, this category. Queen's Gambit got a ton of attention for a show that, you know, I still haven't watched it, but I know, you know, it's about a woman who plays chess, right? Doesn't seem inherently interesting to the masses, but somehow this caught fire in a way that I didn't expect.
Yeah, it's funny because we were talking about this. This is a while ago. We were talking about how like this might have been a miss for us. And it's like, yeah, we really like that, the, like chess fiction. And we were both enthusiastic about like, yeah, we do. And I'm like, yeah, like the like searching for Bobby Fisher and that one scene in Harry Potter with wizards, like there isn't a lot of really good chess fiction, right?
Not. But there's
the stuff that they've made, because I do like chess. I grew up playing chess. I was in a chess club in junior high. It's one thing I was able to, you know, like didn't have a lot of extracurricular activities, and my mom couldn't stop me from doing it. And I like it. I understand chess enough to like, as you know, it's like watching a sports movie of a sport you understand. I understand when the chess is good, but also understand when the chess is kind of like bad. I like period pieces. I like stuff with interesting female characters. Anya Taylor-Joy really impressed me in The Witch, and I've seen her in a couple things since. I thought she's like a really good young actor. Thomas Brody, what's his face? Jojen. In Game of Thrones, and also the little kid from The Holiday, or not The Holiday, Love Actually. There's some cast interest there too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like universally beloved, like 97% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. I do feel like this was a bit of a miss, but
yeah.
What's the but? I thought you would like take it for me.
Netflix. I mean, Netflix is the butt here, like just dropping all of it all at once, right? Like
an initial release of October 23rd, 2020. Like, are not prepared to do something, and the thing we were prepared to do is give full coverage to the Expanse and like wrap up. What was the thing we were wrapping up?
Like if we're not ready, and The Boys was just going off the air.
If we're not ready to go, it's not going to happen in late October, November, December, because we are consumed with getting the Christmas stuff ready to go, with wrapping up our stuff and getting our seat. Like, you know, that's just a really tough time to drop 10 episodes of television on.
And that's the thing about Netflix, right? Is you can never know until the thing actually drops and you get like 3 days of people going, oh shit, this is amazing. Everybody's talking about it. Collider's releasing their shit and... Yeah, you know, you got 15 outlets saying this is the best thing since sliced bread. You just never know with Netflix, because they also drop shows that they expect to be hits, and they go nowhere. They completely fall flat. So,
and 2 years ago, we tried to literally watch everything that Netflix is coming out, and it almost killed us. And also, yep, it wasn't successful because, yep, the vast majority of the stuff is not worth watching.
Right.
Like, you really, really only want to cover stuff that, like, is inherently fascinating, stuff that we're really intensely interested in, because nobody wants us to just talk about, oh, yeah, it's an okay show. Yeah, I guess it was okay. This scene was kind of well executed, kind of, but, you know.
So even if you know it's coming out, you don't know if it's going to be good. You don't know if people are going to latch onto it. And by the time they do, it's already gone. Like, what? We're supposed to scramble a few days after the thing comes out and people started talking about it to get a podcast, a half-assed podcast about it, out in a week on an entire fucking thing, which will literally take all the time we have that week. While we're doing five other things, it's not going to happen. So it's a big miss.
I remember thinking, because I remember a lot of, you know, professional critics decrying The Binge, and you and I were kind of like, you dumb fuckers, you just can't keep up with us young agile podcasters. That was when Netflix was like another channel,
right? House and, of Cards, know, was the only thing that dropped like that.
Yeah, it was coming up, and, like, you know, that was it for the quarter. And then, you know, Stranger Things would drop, and then some. Now it's like you've got that shit coming out every single week and four of it.
Yeah. And not just on Netflix, but on 15 different channels, right?
And,
like,
it's getting harder and harder. And all we can do is continue to the things that personally draw our attention, that we organically like and enjoy, are looking forward to try to cover that and hope it works out.
So. And if something like Queen's Gambit hits and goes real big, and we know it's coming out later for season two or something, we can pick it up then. But, like, season one covers of unknown quantities before we even know if they're going to be popular, let alone good.
Yeah,
it's off the table. But this is a big miss, right? Yeah. I think this goes to the top.
Probably to the top so far, because it's the most inherently interesting. It's the one that, like, when I saw it, I'm like, God, I wish I could see it, but I had literally zero time to do so. The Outsider.
Yeah,
this I remember everyone saying this was like True Detective and Dark combined, and it just didn't look interesting to me.
That's wild. So it's based on a Stephen King book, which I think, depending on how you feel about Stephen King, could be a positive or a negative, because I know a lot of adaptations of Stephen King stuff have been subpar, even in recent memory.
Yeah, I'm up and down on it. Like, I didn't really like that Castle Rock. I really like Dr. Sleep. You know, like, it really is adaptation. Chapter 2 kind of felt like a retread. Yep.
So, hit or miss on the Stephen King stuff. I watched the entirety of this series with my wife, and we really enjoyed watching this week to week. This is an HBO release, and so, you know, it was on television. Crucially, it was on television before the pandemic, I think, hit. Like early this year. And so, you know, HBO was still releasing things on television that were new. And it was all coming out like, an episode a week. It was kind of that perfect model. And it was perfect for this show because you wanted to be in suspense. You didn't want to have the ability to just click play on the next episode and have all your questions answered. This could have been a really good cover for us, as far as podcast goes, because it was a lot to speculate on. It was very interesting in that sort of dark way. And that sort of like, what exactly is happening here? I don't quite understand it, but there are always clues as to what could be happening. Big questions. Would have been a great cover, I think. And I really enjoyed the show, but I don't even remember why we didn't cover this.
I think I was not really interested in it, and it's also like we were really burnt, like this is early in the year, and like I think the 2019 really put us through the ringer in that like last quarter. I was kind of like, you know, doing extra stuff right now. Also, Cecily watched it and she said that it kind of fell apart at the end.
I liked
and
it.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, I didn't have a big
problem.
Maybe
I'm thinking of something else, but
I mean, it's also a season one, so it's an unknown quantity, right? By the time you realize
that wasn't a miniseries.
Well, that's what I mean. Like it was a debut, right? It wasn't like a continuation of a thing you already knew was good. And we don't tend to take a lot of chances on things that we aren't sure are going to be at least very popular, if not also very good. So
yeah.
yeah, we probably wouldn't have covered this season one anyway.
Yeah. What do you think about season two? Because I still like, Supernatural, wow. Stephen King, murder mystery. Like
It looks like HBO passed on a season two, so not going to happen.
There you go. This implies a certain lack of interest from the viewing public at large.
Yeah, especially because Stephen King said the scripts for a second season have been written and the cast and crew are interested in coming back, but HBO didn't really care.
Interesting.
They're shopping this out of their outlets. We'll see.
Yeah, they're also going in like different directions, period. I was trying to think of like Outsider, because
this seems like a perfect opportunity for Netflix to pick up, because you capture a bunch of HBO's audience, right? Oh, you liked Outsider season one? Guess what? HBO's not doing it. It's over here on Netflix now. Come watch it.
The Outsider didn't. It's like, so the first three of these made it on Alan Sepinwall's top 20 of the year. The Outsider is the first one that did not.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I don't think it's a huge miss because,
since you were so pat, I think it should go right underneath Queen's Gambit then.
Oh, yeah, for now, certainly. Let's take that up. It's definitely a bigger miss than any of the other, those two unwatched things that we talked about.
Yeah. How about The Tiger King? Mm-hmm. So it's funny because, like, this isn't a huge miss because it's just a single. You know, it was just a one shot, or was it? It was multiple episode documentary. Was that what the deal was?
Oh yeah, yeah, it was mini episodes.
And this came out early in the year and kind of captured people's is like hit right at the right time when the world was kind of like going skewed anyway. Everyone was kind of locked down. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? You're going to watch Tiger King? We had plans to live watch this with everybody with the Netflix technology, and this was like early in the year when Jim and I, like, I think it was like the first weekend or two after we had fled our offices downtown.
March 20th.
And we're now retired. Like, yeah, it was like the first weekends of us trying to figure stuff out, and we could not get that shit synced up. And it was because we had just done like a bullshit one for a James Bond movie. Mm-hmm. Goldeneye. Yeah, we just successfully watched Goldeneye. And then we could not get that to work the next week. And we never, that was like the thing. It's like, oh, let's wait until we can. And by the time we got this technology working right, we kind of got with this watch party technology on the Amazon side and kind of walked away from this stuff. So this still gets massive the cultural significance. Like, I do feel like I am. But on the other hand, I also feel like I'm kind of in on the joke, like that goddamn Carol Danvers and. No, that's not. That's Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like a lot of the memes I kind of understand through osmosis because everyone is kind of obsessed with the show, but pretty big miss. Like I put it above The Outsider.
I'm going to take this to the top and we'll come back to the top at some point and debate all these, but to the top. Okay.
I May Destroy You. I only put it on there because I wanted to see it. I actually am a pretty big fan of Michaela Cole. She was in that Black Earth Rising.
Oh, okay.
Chewing Gum. She's done a lot of really fascinating character work, and I hear this is kind of like one of those dark, weird comedies about interpersonal relationships and odd ways of living that I kind of am a sucker for. It's on HBO, so that's one of our core audiences. It's more of like, I feel like a personal miss. I need to go back and watch it, then maybe podcast about it. But it was also in, like, I think it was in the top 10 of Alan Sepinwall's top 20. So, but that's all I know about it. It's got a Mandy color palette and it features Michaela Cole.
Okay. Where does it belong? To the top or just where it at?
I think it's, well, I mean, it's inherently, I don't know, because the plot against it's fine. It's fine where it is.
Fine? Okay.
Yep. The Good Lord Bird. I have not finished that series. I've got like three episodes to go. But this is an inherently interesting story about this, you know, quote unquote radical abolitionist John Brown, who led a slave rebellion before the Civil War, was one of the inciting incidents. His raid on Harper's Ferry was one of the things that really brought tensions to a head that led about the Civil War. And I expected kind of an offbeat dark comedy with Ethan Hawke anchoring this kind of insane performance as John Brown. I didn't expect it to be kind of a thoughtful look at where we well-meaning, committed white people can fit in the struggle for racial equality, you know? And the answer seems to be usually in supporting positions.
Sure.
Especially nowadays, like you need to find communities that are doing good work and support them rather than trying to kind of go it yourself. And I thought that was some good. And again, I haven't finished it. This was another one that's on a lot of people's top 10 list of the year. It's on Showtime, which always feels kind of like, because we've done a few Showtime things, it always feels like it's a third less popular than anything else we do. Probably because that's roughly as third less popular as HBO, you know, it's the other premium subscription service. So
it's more popular than Cinemax, but less popular than HBO. It's right between those two.
But it's a hilarious, it's sad, it's got some just weird fucking dynamics in it. Because one of the core dynamics is, John Brown rescuing this little black kid. He's like 14 years old and mistakes him for a girl, puts him in a dress, and they never resolve that confusion in the rest of the series.
How is that possible?
As far as I can tell. Because John Brown, he's kind of... he's not delusional, but he's just single-mindedly focused and doesn't go back and question his tenets once they're deeply held, I guess.
Yeah, but the kid doesn't speak up at the time and say, no, actually, sir, I'm a boy.
I mean, I think it's a little bit of a conceit, and it does come up with others because, you know, so he finds himself in a whorehouse and he's being washed up to be one of the girls and, you know, turns out he's got some extra non-OEM parts issued to him and that causes, but yeah, it never seems to... or at least, again, five episodes in, it has that information hasn't percolated back to John Brown's brain. So, but it's really entertaining seeing Ethan Hunt just screaming purple face, these crazy Bible verses and demanding the equality of all men. The America to hold up to its original promises. This is another one I think would be really good in Swizz Bowl because, like, if you want to cover this, like, just really, you know, fuck it. Make a meal out of it. But,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like this belongs closest to the top. Closest.
Okay. I'm taking it to the top and then we'll come back for it.
Send it to the first bullet place, Vashily.
Turn it.
First bullet place only.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the Premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah well, lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content plus ad-free feeds.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
and get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
Tenet, man. Tenet.
It's a big miss, obviously, right? It's a Christopher Nolan movie. It's super hyped. People were waiting for this for months. It's, you know, it's a victim
of the...
If we
had even 4 weeks notice that they were going to hustle this out on... Because, like, you know,
right.
Nolan fought this tooth and nail, wanted to be in IMAX, all this kind of stuff. It came out in the theaters, like, months ago, and people
and
like,
I wasn't
gotta
fucking
see it.
Going
like,
to a theater. Are you kidding
me?
I'm
not going to fucking go to a megaplex, even with, like, 15 other people 6 feet from me. Like, that seems crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to see... And boy, I tell you what, if I had gone to... If I had been bullied to see this in the theater, I would have came out wroth.
Yeah,
because it's, to put it mildly, not worth risking your life to see.
Definitely not.
I wish. And now I'm at the point where, like, I'm torn. Like, I saw it once and I thought the effects were really good. And there was a performance that made me a believer in something that is noteworthy to talk about. But I did not like this film. And it's the first Nolan, the first kind of mindfuck Nolan film I've watched. And I didn't immediately want to watch it again. Like, I'm like, you know what? I probably need to watch this, maybe even watch it backwards and fuck all that. I don't care.
It's the first Nolan movie that I've come away confused in a bad way. Confused as if, like, I need to watch this again to even understand what I'm supposed to be questioning. Not pondering the answer to the question that I know I should have, but, like, just seriously confused. I don't even know what they're trying to do at the end of this movie. So, like, yeah, I think it's a huge miss because everybody was talking about it. It was a huge blockbuster movie, right? The fact that it didn't live up to the hype, I don't think is a factor in this category necessarily, because people still would have tuned in just to hear, you know, what we were going to say about it, because everybody was going to see this thing.
And that's the thing. It's like, that's the problem I guess I have with covering it, is that, like, I probably should, but if I was going to do it, I should at least watch it one more time, and I really don't want to. So I can either go with my first informed, ignorant take that's not going to make the people that love the film, because the people that took the time to see it three or four times either have Stockholm syndrome with the film, or they genuinely like it, because I've heard that from several people that I don't know why would lie to me.
Yeah, or they're
in
denial.
On the other hand, like, That feels like a lot of homework and a lot of chore to do a podcast. And on the other hand, the people that don't like the movie, like, they would feel validated by that. But, like, most people that don't like a movie don't want to listen to a 2-hour podcast from two dudes explaining why they don't like the movie to them.
Especially, like, months after the fact, right? Like,
yeah, if we could have gotten as a white hot take, like, when it first hit the
first run movie, like, this would have been huge. It would have been great. Whether we understood it or not, because we're coming out of there with just our first impression. And that's, you know, what it is. As like a, you know, a deep dive or a surface skim right now, it seems crazy, but it was a big miss at the time.
Now that brings us to Wonder Woman 84, which is just a bad film. It's just a bad film, and I'm ready to defend that. Here's what I think, and I think it would be a lot of fun to just jump off the top belt, the top buckle, and, like, pile, you know, just drop elbows on this film, because it's just a deeply silly, dumb film. Like, Gal Gadot still is a wonderful Wonder Woman. Pedro Pascal did a really I think that villain had things was interesting, but it had like all the problems of like Spider-Man 3, where there shouldn't have been two villains and they shoehorned one in and didn't give either of them justice. The character hero acted in like profoundly unheroic ways that the movie didn't really examine. The film was ugly to look at in a lot of its special effects. You know, like there's a couple of things that the Wonder Woman does very well, but a lot of it. So here's my thing. At some point, we are going to do live streams. In February, especially to build up towards we're very close to making partner on Twitch, and we've been doing it on these watch parties and people like them, and we got to pump up our stats. HBO through this Netflix viewers or screener, I forget what the name of it's
Teleparty.
Called. Teleparty. We can do a community live watch of everything on HBO. It actually might be interesting to do like a February Wednesday stream of these two movies just to like walk through and just kind of like talk about our problems with it in real time. Make fun of Wonder Woman.
It could be, certainly. It's probably
and those not. Would count for actual hours of streaming too, right? Because it wouldn't
but
be
I bet
in
it
the
would,
watch party.
I bet it would chop the knees out from our average viewer count. Because how many people are going to sync up a thing on another service and install a browser plugin in?
Nah, you're probably right.
In order to do that,
you're probably right.
I think like the Twitch watch party is so convenient that it's bolstering our stats, but
yeah,
this is borderline.
People away.
I don't know.
Okay, it might be something to try because I think it would be a little fun. But yeah, I don't think it's ever a miss when you're just going to like knowingly shit on something because. You know, our community is just much more driven on love than hate.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like it might be unseemly just to just sit there and like, you know, kick a movie when it's down, so to speak. Just because it like pisses off the people that like it unironically. And it doesn't really edify to people that don't. So
I deeply love doing that.
It is fun.
Personally, I enjoy sitting down and watching a bad movie and just going, oh, God, this is atrocious.
It is fun.
You know, it to shit like The Room. There's a culture that loves to do that. I'm part of it. I don't know what our audience is, though.
We do that. I mean, that's what hats. But the thing is, it's like it works best when there's in some affection. Like I like doing that with Star Trek. And that's half of the stuff we do on our Sci-Fi Sundays is kind of like poke fun and laugh with and at Star Trek. But it's always from a place of love. Like I unironically love the show and the characters where, you know, some stuff would just be. Kind of vicious, I guess.
No, I can't say that about Wonder Woman 84. I don't love the movie or the characters. I haven't even seen the movie, and I don't plan on ever watching this because people said it's atrocious. So fuck it.
No, it's pretty bad. It's too bad because I really liked the first Wonder Woman, and I thought maybe that was franchise that would be kind of like pure and unsullied by the DC touch. And Turns out, nah.
That's the reason why it goes above the rest of these, because we do have a history with Wonder Woman. People like that first movie. I like that first movie for the most part. Yeah. I want to put it up there and we can talk about it. I feel like these are pretty much locked out of the top five, right?
Only because you haven't seen Plot Against America. Is that what the... Because Plot Against America, I think, would have... What?
Are you kidding me with these? Okay, I'm gonna have to go in here.
No, you put it the thing next to that, Jim, is the unordered list. You got an unordered list.
I want it on an ordered list though, because I eventually, I want to get a top five here and then lock everything else out.
You got a mixed case. Don't control A it and then click on that, and I think you might get where you're wanting to go.
Just all this?
No, like control select everything. You leave. Yeah, now do that. Right? Is that what you want?
No, I wanted it. I guess we can go through E. That's five, right?
Oh, I see. You're wanting just that.
Oh, my God. Oh, no. We've ruined it all. Okay.
We take the biggest miss out of the list, and then you just order it, right? So get the bullet point out of biggest miss, and you'll be good. Right?
Because that's just a sub-edit. Fuck you, list. I beat you. I'm better than a list.
Biggest miss? Almost our inability to use ordered lists. Okay. So why is Plot Against America so low? Because I do think that would have been good Bald Move / Swizzbold discussion?
Well, because nobody was watching it, it's David Simon. Nobody watches his shit, apparently. Outside of The Wire.
It did have a great companion podcast, the official one that went with it.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Yeah, here's the counterpoint is, I do think we found success this year doing niche shows that have niche popularity and are not well served. There were not a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
We could have gotten Chernobyl type numbers off this probably easily if we had covered it. And so I think it should be higher. My immediate blush is that
right there.
Okay. All right. I feel like the Queen's Gambit, and really this category is almost all about the top position. I feel like the Queen's Gambit's going to win. I don't know why. But I feel like that's the one that we're probably most in agreement. Like, you know what? I saw that show. It looked like something I want to watch. And people said it's really great. It did good numbers for Netflix. It was consistently in their top 1 to 3 position for like many, many weeks. It's just bad timing and us being not prepared for it.
Oof. So these are my top
audience
three.
Really liked it
currently. Not
the
in
Tiger
that order
King over Queen's Gambit.
Not in that order necessarily, but these are my top three that I think are genuine, real big misses that if we could have covered them, we would have gotten a lot of traffic and it would have been fun. In one way or another.
You're right.
With Tenet,
The plot against America would have zero fun. There'd be zero. Not that there was no moments of levity in that show between the families, but like really zero fun. It's bad. It's not a good experience.
This is
a cautionary tale.
Tough, because I haven't seen all of Plot Against America. I think that would be a good, interesting cover and good discussions. I think The Outsider, I would swap The Good Lord Bird and The Outsider, but that's only because I haven't seen The Good Lord Bird and I really enjoyed The Outsider.
See, I just have that Supernatural shit.
It's also HBO versus Showtime.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a murder mystery as opposed to like a political thing.
A slave revolution.
Yeah, I would probably put Outsider in slot 4.
Okay, so let's, because again, I don't really care about like outside of top 3.
Well, for what I know for sure.
I'm trying to see if I want to argue that either The Good Lord Bird or Plot Against America go above Queen's Gambit or Tenet or Tiger King.
Oh, God.
I don't think they do.
Yeah, I can't imagine anything on this list with the exception of maybe Wonder Woman. I don't know. Making it into the top 5 that isn't already in there.
So here's my take of your top 3, because I think I'm kind of in agreement. Maybe a slight quibble. Maybe I want to substitute The Good Lord Bird for one of these three. Not The Queen's Gambit, but maybe Tiger King or Tenet.
Really? Like
Queen's Gambit, I think.
Based on what? Just like personal interest in the topic?
Yeah.
Because that's not what I'm basing it on. I'm basing it on.
Yeah, and the fact that, no, audience, and I've seen all of The Plot Against America and almost all of The Good Lord Bird. So like I've got a lot of personal history, not just anticipation behind them. But So here's my take on the top 3. The Queen's Gambit's probably the best fit between our personal interest of the subject, our interest in the people involved in the subject, and our audience's interest in same.
And the quality and wide, of
and
the thing.
Quality and popularity and accessibility. Like Netflix is, everyone's got Netflix.
Well, then we just settled it because I agree.
Okay.
I mean, it wins the other, this category, right?
I think Tiger King is slightly higher in the, like, everyone saw Tiger King but me, I feel like. Like, literally everyone saw Tiger King. It was just, like, a phenomenon that I think wins the entire year. But I really didn't give a shit about Tiger King. Like, I immediately grasped what it was, and you're pointing and laughing at this deluded rich person that fucks with tigers and his travails of being a kind of, like, quasi-legal exotic animal guy. And I just like don't care. Like that's like real life Always Sunny, and I've got Always Sunny, which is better. So
yeah.
And Tenet is only interesting because I love Christopher Nolan. I've seen almost all of his movies, and it's the first one he's ever made that I didn't like at all.
And there's a huge audience. Like everybody wanted this film.
Yeah, like if this was if we were still doing if the coronavirus hadn't hit, this would absolutely have been a first run bald movie, and it would probably been a 2.5 hour podcast. And we probably would have revisited it the next week because we'd gotten so much feedback about it. And, you know, like, but the fact that it kind of like didn't make it and then kind of landed like a fat, wet turd. And yeah, but I think the Queen's Gambit is the biggest miss.
I agree. I think Queen's Gambit wins, and in no particular order, as we usually do our top five, our nominees. I'm good with that list too. Like, I would definitely put The Outsider above Good Lord Bird. Like I said, I haven't seen Good Lord Bird.
I wish Tiger King.
But if they're no particular order, then yeah, that's good.
I wish Tiger King was an Amazon Video production, because I imagine it'd be a hell of a lot of fun to watch with an audience.
For sure.
Yeah, automatically synced up. So,
all right. Biggest miss. Queen's Gambit wins it with Tenet, Tiger King, Good Lord Bird, and The Outsider being nominees.
I think I agree with those orders pretty much, especially in the like top three and four. Then it gets wonky, but who cares?
Top three. Yeah, all right. I'm certainly on board with.
All right. The next category for consideration is best documentary. Some years we have a bunch of these. Some years we don't have many. Some years we don't have any at all. This year we have a few. The Last Dance. This is a document. It's really about Michael Jordan, but also about the you know, kind of like parallel structures of the two sets of three-peats that the Bulls did, because you kind of like go through all the history, and it's kind of like the growth of Michael Jordan, the growth of the Bulls, and then the defense of the Bulls' legacy kind of like is all rolled up in the narrative. But honestly, this is a Michael Jordan documentary. His, you know,
for sure. And the framing device being that final year as they're working, you know, through the playoffs to actually clinch this second three-peat.
And I thoroughly enjoyed this because I was a huge basketball and Michael Jordan. I mean, I grew up in Indiana. It's almost required to be a fan of basketball. And I grew up idolizing him and Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. I was even old enough to remember like the previous generation of Dr. J, Wilt Chamberlain. Like I had some institutional memory of these guys from like my dad and my uncles and stuff. And this was also, I was a big fan of the Pacers, and like the Pacers play pretty prominently in some of these playoff victories, well, losses in our case. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, it's kind of like seeing like there's a mini documentary about Reggie Miller kind of stuffed in here, which I have an enormous appetite for that kind of stuff. So I love this. I thought this was relentlessly watchable, fascinating, hilarious, poignant, tells you something about the human spirit. It's a great documentary, so
I'm with you.
I kind of feel like it's like going to be hard to beat. Mm-hmm. However, Chaos on the Bridge was a commissioned podcast. I think it's like a 45 minute, maybe an hour and a half long documentary on the first three seasons of Star Trek: The Next Generation that answered so many questions that I've long wondered about the fuck was going on. In this, and trying to get the Next Generation off the ground.
Yeah, why is season one and season two? Why are those seasons so bad? They're so
bad.
Why
did season three almost instantly get better, so much better? And this documentary provided a lot of satisfying answers with a lot of like, you know, interviews with the cast and crew and underwriting staff and like executives, and just like it all. I felt came to life. I just understood it all. Like, oh, this asshole butted heads with this asshole and was causing this drama. Like, it's a great, I thoroughly enjoyed watching it. And it was a great way to start our voyage through the Star Trek, The Next Generation series we've been doing on over on Twitch.
Yeah. It was a commission, and I don't know that I ever would have found out about it without the commission. Like, I don't go seek these things out, but man, I love them when I see them. So
it's free on YouTube, or at least it was when we watched this. So if you want to find it, search for Chaos on the Bridge. There's a complete copy on YouTube. Looks legit. Doesn't look like. So, yeah, check it out.
Am I remembering correctly? It has some Shatner in it, too. Don't we get a little bit of Shatner?
Shatner is the narrator. And right. I think one of the main producers. So,
and every once in a while, they show him like interviewing someone or something.
I, like I said, somewhere there's 30 minutes of Bill Shatner cutting up with Jonathan Frakes, and we get to see like 20 glorious seconds of it. Maybe they're fist fighting the rest of it. I don't know. But my God, this like these kind of two legendary hands going to get it just is really delightful.
I want the behind the scenes on this behind the scenes documentary.
Yeah,
that's what I want.
Yeah, I would. If there was a Blu-ray with like 4 hours of like just raw footage, I would buy it. I'd pay $100 for that. Probably $200.
Featurette called "Chaos on the Set of Chaos on the Bridge."
chaos with the Shatner.
Yes.
Chaos with the Shat. So yeah, then we've got the holiday movies that made us. I was down in Gatlinburg on my wedding anniversary, up in the cabin, a secluded cabin up in the mountains. We knew we were going to do Elf as our big holiday movie. This thing dropped that day, and I'm like, oh, I like the What's That Made Us, the toys that made us, the cartoons. They've had several of these nostalgic looking series. Yeah, this seems like a lot of fun. It was, yeah, I'm glad I watched that because I think it made our podcast better and made me appreciate this kind of like modern Christmas classic. I went and watched The Nightmare on Elm Street, and I think that was a bigger waste of my time. And this series has problems. Series style.
I don't like the style of it all.
What is the interstitial
stuff that they do, the jokes that they try and make, the writing on this, like the stuff that's actually written is bad. The dialogue, the narration.
Yeah, I feel like if you've got a company that's interested in just kind of like telling everything and has a positive experience and it's like fun, it goes okay. But like when you have like a where like there's people fighting over credit and maybe has some bad blood, they don't know what to do with that, and they try to treat it with the same kind of zany, you know, kazoo shit that they do the rest of the series with, and it just feels, I don't know.
No.
But like, it bothered me a little bit with Elf, but it really almost destroys The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Wow. I didn't see that one. I just saw the Elf episode of this.
So, yeah. Whereas like, Elf felt like everyone that loved stuff coming together and doing, you know, felt like a Lord of the Rings. Like, Nightmare Before Christmas felt like something that succeeded despite people, and maybe the wrong people got credit for it, and the people are bad people. I don't know. Yeah. It wasn't as feel good. And then McMillions. I saw the first episode. I remember the FBI agent with the colorful attitude and suit and really detesting him.
Doug.
And decided that, like, you know what? This is an inherently interesting thing that would have been an amazing 90-minute documentary, and they're blowing it out to 7 hours, and I don't fucking care. Did I get it wrong, Jim?
Because
you saw
not,
the whole thing?
You're not totally wrong. I saw the whole thing, yeah. My wife and I watched it. I will say I enjoyed Doug throughout the whole thing. His antics were fun. It goes places like this McMillions or this McDonald's scam, you know, where they're stealing pieces and giving them to relatives. That goes places, places connected to like the Jersey mob. And just like, it paints a picture of these people who are just incredibly dumb about the way they're doing things. And that's the only reason they really ever got caught is because the people they gave these pieces to were just idiots. And they gave them to people to, you know, for a bunch of stupid reasons, and they made their trail obvious. You feel by the end of it for some people who got caught up in this thing, not really knowing what they were getting into. So it has kind of an emotional journey for some of these people. And I think like in the end, the right decisions were made around that. The guy who definitely legitimately didn't know what this was really all about and didn't know how deep it went.
How do you go then rig a lottery like this and not know you're rigging a lottery? That's the thing I'm confused. Like how do you get just sucked up and along for the ride?
Because a guy who stole the piece gave it to a guy to sell to another guy who's your cousin who gave it to you and just said, hey, take this in exchange for something. I got this piece. I need money or whatever. Do you want to buy it? I need money now instead of like, you know, X. Yeah, there's one guy who gets caught up in it that like you really feel for him by the end. And I don't think gets sentenced to any prison time or like time served or something like that.
You're so, pretty
Yeah, I definitely felt for the guy, that one guy. The rest of them, fuck them. They knew what they were doing. They knew that something was up. And man, the wife of the guy who was like perpetuating this whole thing or perpetrating this whole scheme. Ooh, yeah. She's a lot. There's just a cast of colorful characters, some of which you love, some of which you hate. Doug is so much fun, and this whole scheme is so interesting, right? It's like this mundane thing. It's this contest that McDonald's puts on, but the stakes are pretty damn high. It's millions of dollars.
And we've all seen, like, I remember, like, when I was, I think one of the interesting things was, like, watching the commercials of, like, the game, because I fucking love the, I always played the McDonald's Monopoly game. Mm-hmm. And the, like, you know, when they, you'd see people, like, at sitting at a McDonald's, and it would say, this is Mike McFuckface. He won $1 million. And, you know, a guy coming out of their McDonald's would be like, hey, I won $1 million. How many of those dudes were these guys in on it? Like, completely, like, tons. It kind of blows your mind. I remembered those commercials and their faces and the suspiciously fat guy and all this other, and like, well, it's, shit, to know that this was like, they were like, it's a particular type of shit eating grin on their faces in retrospect.
Yeah. And some of them were resistant to the idea of getting on camera, like didn't want to be on camera at all.
Yeah, don't say. Yeah. Don't want to be.
Cause yeah, they knew what they were involved with. There's one dude who I think lives in Florida or something, and like, or maybe all of this took place in Florida. A lot of it takes place in Florida.
A lot of it takes place in Florida for sure.
But there's one dude who is like, just tell it all. Like, he has the inside track on this. He knows so much about it. And he's just like, yeah, of course all this was bullshit. Of course it was rigged. Nobody thought it was real. Everybody knew they were stealing. That guy's so entertaining. I don't know. I really enjoyed this documentary. It was fun. Yeah, it's silly. It's not like The Jinx or something, right, where they're cracking murder cases and pinning the guy to the wall right there on camera. But it was fun.
Yeah, my only real problem with this is I just felt like I was expecting like a tight 90 minute. Like, I was like, there's no fucking way. Yeah. And the first episode wasted so much of my time that I felt. But I also, to be honest, I felt that way about the... I'm having an elaborate series of heart attacks here. I don't know what's going on. I felt that way about the Lorena Bobbitt film or the documentary four part. Like, I watched that first. I'm like, this is a fucking joke. I forced myself to watch, and I'm like, oh, and it got so much better. But I don't, like, a couple of documentaries I've seen recently have got like the anti hook, or maybe they're trying to hook someone that's not me into watching it, and they trick them by getting them stuck on the first. It's like, oh, look at this zany stuff, and we're gonna like go deep into these details and. You know, I kind of, now that you've spoken so highly of it, I kind of want to go and get a lightweight, consequence free kind of political scandal. That's not a political scandal.
Yeah. I mean, if you want some cotton candy documentaries to watch, that's still like, I don't know, feel like they have some importance, at least a little bit. This is a good one.
Okay, here's a hot take.
Yeah.
These are all in the correct order already, and we don't have to do anything with them.
Ooh, man. I disagree, because The Holiday Movies That Made Us is genuinely bad in spots. I think we swap The Holiday Movies and McMillions, and we have got ourselves a list.
Okay, I won't fight you there, because I really, really liked the Elf one, and I didn't like the Nightmare Before Christmas one.
And the Elf.
And I haven't seen McMillions.
The Elf was bad in spots. Like, every time the narrator comes on, the Elf documentary gets bad. Until they get to the story and the interviews and the...
Cecily said the same thing, so it must be right. But I guess I have my affection for material over one. Because I saw all the problems with the Nightmare Before Elm Street approach and... Mm-hmm. Recognize that they're probably structural weaknesses, but got the Done and Done, Last Dance.
Easy. And our top four is already set.
Yeah.
We'll probably just do a top three here, maybe. I don't know. It's hard to do a top anything when it includes everything.
That's true.
Next category.
Are we going to like do anything? We're going to stop it?
No.
Or roll right
Keep
in?
Rolling. Okay.
Biggest surprise. Run these down for us, Jim.
No particular order. The third day, 24-hour live stream. The Walking
HBO Jude Law kind of weird cult island production.
Do you want me to like describe these, or do you just want me to read them?
Yeah, I think I think you say something about them. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So right, this is a 24-hour live stream they did during lockdown. They had to call audibles. We'll talk all about it. Starring Jude Law, The Walking Dead season 9, which is post airing coverage of ours. It's like back catalog stuff. If we had a return to form category, there might be a spot for it in that. Who knows? Harley Quinn. I don't know anything about this.
Animated series about Harley Quinn. Harley Quinn kind of had a quinnaissance this year. I don't even
Birds
know what the
prey,
fuck they call
it. The name
Birds of Prey, the fabulous emancipation of one Harley Quinn. Like, they ended up just calling it Harley Quinn Birds of Prey. That actually was a really good DC movie. It was surprisingly entertaining. That could have probably been in the biggest surprise too. But Harley Quinn is the animated version of this. It's subversive, it's funny, it's incredibly violent. It's got just like a great sense of dark humor, and it lets like the, you know, Harley Quinn and her compatriot in crime, Poison Ivy, like be legit badasses in Gotham. And Batman's in there and he's cool too. Like, it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't work at the expense of Batman or the Joker. It's just lets Harley Quinn be her own character. And it's really, really, if you like comic book shit at all, give Harley Quinn a try. If you like subversive animation at all, give Harley Quinn a try. It's on HBO. It's fantastic. I am on pins and needles for season 3 to come out. So
Ted Lasso. I don't know anything about Ted Lasso.
People on Bald Moves Forum bullied me into watching this Ted Lasso, Jason Sudeikis. I'm kind of on Jason Sudeikis anyway. Apple TV. I'm kind of on Apple TV. It's a comedy, and it's a very kind of like cloying sentimental comedy, which I'm kind of like on that stuff. And I'm like, I can't believe you people are making me watch this fucking show. And I got 3 episodes in and I was going to stop, but there's this one hot older lady that's just ridiculous, like just really pushes all my buttons. And I'm like, you know what? I'll keep watch another episode. And episode 4, the clouds parted, the sunshine, and I instantly got what was great about Ted Lasso, and I had to eat all the crow. But it was like, it is heartwarming and it is kind of cloying, but it's also, I don't know. It's like, I'm really starting to get a soft spot for comedies that show kind of damaged, problematic people that are like, instead of just like, I'm fucked and that's just how I am, and like figuring things out and like learning like positive social skills and coping mechanisms and doing it in real time and showing how it's not like a light switch process. And Ted Lasso does all that very well. And also really funny in places too. So yeah. There's a double surprise. Fuck Ted Lasso, and then oh god, I actually like Ted Lasso.
The Great season 1. I haven't seen this either.
Okay, what do you think about this?
The Great?
Do you know anything about this?
I assume it's like The Crown. I assume it's exactly like The Crown because I know nothing about it.
Because Catherine the Great predates The Crown by like a century or so, but like, yeah, this is kind of like
but that century, not much changed, let's be honest.
So this is Catherine the Great, and we join her tale the moment she gets married to Peter the Third in Russia, who's played by Nicholas Holt, which you might know as Young Beast from the newer installments of the X-Men franchise. Okay. And it's like this fun period piece, and it's just a lot of fun, and it's packed with a lot of like accurate history, and they just kind of like, you know, Romeo plus Juliet it with like some modern sensibilities and aesthetics. And but also Catherine the Great was kind of like a big reformer and, you know, progressive for her time, and going against this kind of backwards ultra religious Orthodox Christianity Russian Empire and trying to make it like a little bit more peasant friendly. She had a lot of bumps. And Cecily made a, I think, 5-minute supercut of every time someone says the words huzzah and throws a drink against the wall or ground. And watch that. If it tickles you, check out the series. It's really good. It's on Hulu. Another one I'm really looking forward to season 2 on.
And finally, rounding out the category, Robert Pattinson himself, the actor, is potentially the biggest surprise here for The Lighthouse and Tenet, both of those performances. Yeah.
Talk about that. Why is he in a big, why is he a surprise?
Well, okay. Everybody knows who Robert Pattinson is. And if you don't recognize the name, you probably recognize the character. He's the lead vampire in Twilight movies.
Sparkle you know Boy, him. Yeah.
You've seen him. I assumed that that was all Robert Pattinson was. And I've seen all the Twilight movies because I watched them as riff tracks with you, a lot of them. And I didn't think much of his performance because it's not great. It's very, very wooden. It's a nothing of a performance. And then here he comes along. It's been, what, a decade? At least 2 decades since Twilight came out? I don't even know.
I think a decade's about right.
Probably so. And I just hadn't even thought about Robert Pattinson in that decade, right? Because who would?
Aware that he's done stuff, and I started becoming aware that he's done some indie stuff that people are like, oh, you know, Robert Pattinson, he had that Water for Elephants or whatever the fuck it was.
And yeah, but you're not going to erase my memory of Twilight with a single movie, right?
Or get me to see a Robert Pattinson film called Water for Elephants. You know, like, no.
Sure. I don't care how indie it is.
Yeah. Fuck off. Go rehabilitate your career some other place.
Right. Or rehabilitate your career and then we'll talk. You know, then we can negotiate about Robert Pattinson. So the rehabilitation has happened over the last 10 years, or it started. To me, the demarcation here between Robert Pattinson in Twilight and Robert Pattinson, the actor, is The Lighthouse. I saw The Lighthouse early this year, and it frankly blew me away. And not just because Willem Dafoe is a beast of an actor, which he is. But Robert Pattinson holds his own on screen.
Stands toe to toe, yeah.
With one of the, you know, most intense, craziest actors on the planet. Gives a performance that is remarkable in a movie that's remarkable. Like, The Lighthouse is an amazing film, and Robert Pattinson is amazing in it.
And there are lines like, I'm sick of you goddamn Fox.
Yeah.
Delivered in the most Boston of Rob accents, and it still doesn't matter. It's an amazing performance. It's like, it's something else, man.
No, it's wild. I mean, he's out in the pump house pumping it at one point.
Yeah.
During this film, drinking monkey pump and pumping
cranking his crank, pumping his monkey pump. It's all kinds of cranking and pumping and mermaid porn.
Incredible, man. And Robert Pattinson is now an actor to be watched in my mind.
Yes. Like, he's single hand. Like, I remember he got cast before. I think we knew, like, we saw The Lighthouse and Tenet, and, he got cast as Batman. And that's a kind of a famously tough role to play the twin roles, the grim, ultra serious Batman swinging hammers of justice and also be the carefree billionaire playboy. Yeah. You know, like it's like, There's a real duality there, and some characters really do well, some characters don't. And a lot of people are like, how's this guy gonna, like, you know, he's not serious enough to be Batman, and he's too, you know, this to be Bruce. Like, Tenet, like, The Lighthouse shows that he's a serious actor. Tenet shows that he can sleepwalk his way through Batman and Bruce Wayne.
Oh yeah,
because he essentially is playing a version of Bruce Wayne and kind of Batman. Like, there's a couple of, like, if he had horns on his helmet in a tactical helmet, he would be fucking Batman in some of these scenes in Tenet. So I don't know if the new Batman's going to be good, because DC kind of doesn't know what the hell they're doing, and Warner Brothers either. I mean, this studio is giving another $100 million to Zack Snyder to make a 4-hour version of the Justice League. Like, what the fuck? But it's not going to be him. If it sucked, it's not going to be because of him.
And so. We just watched and podcasted. It's not out yet. It will be by the time this is, though. Tombstone, which is starring another Batman actor who I thought was the shittiest Batman ever, potentially. George Clooney and him are kind of in the running.
Yeah.
But it obviously comes down to the directing, right? Like, what kind of performance are you getting out of him? Because he's amazing as Doc Hollywood. In Tombstone, Robert Pattinson is amazing in The Lighthouse. I know he can pull this off. Just, will they give him the material that he needs, and will he have the direction that he needs?
Yeah, will the script come through? Will the director get at what he needs out of him? Because he's got it to give if you can get it out of him. So, okay, that's a good rundown. Where do we put, okay, the third hour, currently the third day, 24-hour live stream is at the top. I think The Walking Dead is a bigger surprise because I really anticipated going back to Walking Dead season 9 and just, you know, treating it like a whoopee cushion. You know, you're going to do the same thing. Hey, you're going to blow it up. You're going to sit on it and make a fart noise. Hey, people laugh and we're just going to, you know, it's something we get through.
Yeah.
I found a lot of material, especially once you got out of the first few episodes and you got firmly out of the Gimple era and into Angela. Well, who? Goddamn it. Who's Kang. The showrunner? Yeah. Kang. You got to the Kang era. I found it very good and resonant. Like a lot of them dealing with like kind of this shithole world resonated with a lot of us dealing with the 2020 shithole world. And I don't know, like getting rid of Andrew Lincoln kind of left room in the other parts of the cast that had been like underserved for many years to shine. They did a lot of really good work with Carol and Daryl.
And she had a tough road to hoe because Gimple had left that series in just an abysmal state.
Nothing in the cupboards. Cupboards bare.
Yeah. And so she had to, you know, forage for food to rebuild season 9. And she did it. It was a little rough road in the first couple of episodes, right? Correcting all the mistakes and plotting a new trajectory. But I think, what she's bringing to that show is far better than it's been in recent seasons and close to the best it's ever been. Which is, you know, not saying a ton. I think season 1 is still maybe the best season of that show. Season 2 also good, but like season 9's up there problems. At this point. Like, yeah. You know, not bad. Shocking. Big surprise considering where we left it and what we came back to.
And boy, that's one of the great what ifs of like, what a comeback story if we'd have stuck with that one more season and gotten halfway through it and been like, are we crazy or is this good? Like, my God, that would have been a real like emotional through line to take. But, you know, we took it. And the other thing is, I guess, is there any possibility that we wouldn't have been along for the ride if we'd gone on there out of obligation without any break? And like,
yeah,
because I don't know. I want to say in a vacuum that, yeah, like it might have happened a couple episodes later. But like somewhere in the transition between season 9B, A and B, we would have been like, this is kind of fucking good. These villains are neat. These setups no longer require you to shut off your brain in many cases. And also, you're kind of afraid for the main characters again. Mm-hmm. Because they do a lot of like kind of shocking. And, you know, I didn't have any knowledge about this is where I stopped reading The Walking Dead. So like all that stuff was like really, it didn't bother me. They didn't do it right like the comics, or they did a worse version of the comics. Like, I was just really sucked into it. So I'm unironically looking forward to continuing our coverage of season 10.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll catch up in time to get 11, the final season, as it comes, because yeah, I'm digging it.
So I don't know. You're going to have to take these three here because I haven't seen any of that. That stuff. So
like, do you want to say, because Robert Pattinson being good and badass is pretty much a shocker. Like, you want to move it to the.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. If you want to do it like that.
We can talk about it.
So Harley Quinn R-rated comedy animation is not a huge surprise. This is not the best of these. This is the most surprising. So, like, I got to say, I was pretty low on the surprise that the great, you know, Dakota Fanning's sister with Nick Holt doing like a period piece, kind of like, you know, like Hulu's. This is in Hulu's lane. Like, this is very harlot-y. So it didn't surprise me. Ted Lasso being like taking me 4 episodes to realize it's kind of amazing. I kind of want to be like, fuck you, show, for making me watch 90 or 110 minutes of relatively pedestrian comedy. But also, they kind of had to do a lot of setup, and a lot of the things I bitched about were later resolved You know, like the central thesis of this, like, you know, that some British football owner would bring an American football coach because she's a little woman and doesn't understand football, like, was kind of borderline offensive and dumb and drove a lot of the initial action. But then you find out, like, this is a mild spoiler, but if you're, you know, not on the Ted Lasso wagon, then fuck you. I'm trying to get you in on it. It's revealed that she's doing this to destroy her ex-husband's football club because she hates him and she wants to destroy something that he loved. Mm-hmm. And she's doing all of this stuff that seems to be just her being ridiculously short-sighted and stupid out of spite and malice. And how is a sunny character like Ted Lasso going to salvage the situation? That's where it gets good. And you don't find that out until literally like the climax of the third episode. So
gotcha.
Just know that all the stupid, stereotypical fish out of water comedy stuff that doesn't really work is set up for the stuff that does. But, you know, you got to watch 100 minutes of stuff that is, I don't think, great to get there. So,
yeah, as far as big surprise, it doesn't sound like I don't know. Big surprise kind of to me implies that it has a reputation or a history that it needs to live up to. Whereas Ted Lasso is a brand new thing, as is the
Great Network. Yeah.
So neither of these can really rise above where they are, in my opinion, because Harley Quinn does have the history, right? Like, it's got DC behind it, and that's good and bad, right? Because DC has a history of great animation. DC also has a history especially of bullshit recently.
Warner Brothers Animation, like, you go back to the Batman animated series, you go back to Batman Beyond, you go back to Adventures of Batman and Superman, Justice League, very well regarded. And it's kind of like shocking that they have these guys that have got this multiverse worth of shit that's universally beloved, and no one's thought to just like flip them the keys, you know? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, if they kept the double D's, you know, Filoni and Favre, the double F's.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay.
The double F's. If they kept them on this, you know, I like what you did at the Clone Wars, and you did it.
But you're animation baby guys. You're
more of a Baby Yoda guy and more of a cartoon guy. Like, you don't really get adult Star Wars. Like, it'd be kind of like that because they've got this formula, and they're just not using it. So
yeah, and they have another formula which is not working, and they need to swap them out because apparently. Okay.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't a joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
Well, then you got to talk about the third day live stream, because you've talked about it and I still don't quite get it. Like, I really thought the third day was great, but I kind of expected it to be with that pedigree and Jude Law and doing weird shit and, you know, a little bit of a Wicker Man shit that looked inherently fascinating. Haven't watched the companion series, the other.
Yeah. So this show was split into two halves by this 24-hour live stream. So you had three episodes. Excuse me. You had three episodes with Jude Law where he was on the island doing his thing. Then you had the 24-hour live stream aired after those aired. And then you had three more episodes aired without Jude Law, which I have not watched yet because Jude Law is not in them. And he's probably the number one reason why I watched the show in the first place. Not to mention, you know, it has these Wicker Man themes, which I feel like I got all I needed to get of the Wicker Man stuff from the first three episodes and the live stream. The live stream is surprising to me because it's a 24-hour event, uninterrupted, uncut, as best I can tell. I'm not sure they had any cuts whatsoever. It didn't sound like a thing you could really do on television, you know? And yet they were going to do it. And initially, the other thing that's so crazy about it is they had to call an audible on this huge, like 24-hour live stream event. Takes no small amount of planning. And they had to call an audible on this thing a month right before they were going to air it because the COVID shut down their plans. Like the idea of this 24-hour live stream was going to be that they were going to have a huge festival on this island where this really happens in real life. They have a big festival every year. Tens of thousands of people come to this island and they all party down. Well, guess what? You're not doing during a pandemic, bringing tens of thousands of people to an island where they party down.
Yeah.
And so
unless it's in New Zealand and they didn't come from someplace else, they're actually on the island and party down that way. Sure.
And they can party down all they want. They earned it. But you know, to call an audible on this big event that they had planned and then still pull it off, in my opinion, as successfully as they did, was a huge surprise because I was enthralled with this thing. I've never seen a 24-hour televised event.
It wasn't 20. I thought it was like 8 hours. It was really 24.
24 full hours.
You watched 24 hours of this shit?
Yeah, I background watched most of it. Let me like paint kind of a picture of what a 24-hour live event looks like.
I've been involved with three.
Well, yeah, if you're trying to produce a thing and make it like, we've got one coming up on the, actually we just had one probably when this comes out.
By the time you hear this,
fourth annual. So they spend maybe 15 minutes getting across the causeway that is the land bridge between, you know, the temporary land bridge that the tide erases.
You can drive over high tide. It's gone. Yeah.
Yeah. They take you very slowly. I would say the camera never moves at more than like 2 miles an hour to get to where it's going. It's a very slow paced thing where they take you across the bridge and into town down this road. They take you through all the prep for this festival that they were going to have, and it involves just like sitting in a field for an hour and a half, a literal hour and a half of screen time, watching people stuffing fake bodies full of straw. There's an hour and a half of that.
There's no dialogue.
Just like, and the soundtrack throughout is just kind of like this droning sort of ominous feeling music.
Oh, it does have a drum. I thought it would just be like atmospheric, like bugs buzzing and frogs singing and birds calling.
Occasionally it is, but most of it is score. It's kind of crazy.
Reznor shit. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. But very, very lightly scored stuff that really works for me. And then they have another hour and a half chunk where Jude Law is being taken through the rites of passage on this island to become the king of the island. And he has to do all these trials. It's sort of a Jesus-esque, like this whole thing is based around like a Jesus-esque mythos of this king. And he goes through the trials. They force him to dig a hole in the ground, which is essentially like going to be a grave. And he does it. Jude Law really does it. And you've got to think about like how you got to put yourself in his position, and they give you time to do that because it's like an hour and a half shot. Never cuts away. Jude Law digging a hole for an hour and a half in thick, heavy clay while it's raining.
It's hard work.
Dude, by the end of that scene alone, Jude Law has to be exhausted because he's dug a 6-foot hole over the course of an hour and a half in heavy soil. No, no, he's got
Oh my God.
Right? He's not, you got to think, he's not a construction
worker.
Right? He's an actor.
Yeah, you're going to rub the skin off your hands. Jesus Christ.
Absolutely. And they gave him this long ass sweater that he's wearing. And he's like putting the sleeves down over his hands. You can see how painful it is. And he's looking at his hands the whole time. And you got to think, this guy is not acting at this point. This guy is just living this scenario. And that's just like the first trial. Then they lash a boat to him on dry land and have him drag it from the town center to the coast. And that takes a long ass time. And you can tell at some, it's interesting to see like where the safeties are in this whole process. Right. Because he goes to take the first pull of this boat to try and move it. And it doesn't really move. And he goes, he looks back at it and you can tell he's like kind of nervous. And this is like the man and the actor. And I'm not sure where the two meet. And he starts pulling it, but it's very slow and very hard. And he's got it over his shoulder and it's, you know, he's dug a hole. Now he's holding a rope with the same hands that just dug that hour and a half hole. And he's got to drag it all the way to the coast. The people are helping him at times because at one point he turns back to the guys that are behind him. And you can tell there's like some communication, like he nods at them or something. And then they start helping him a little more because he's not going to make it to the coast.
Gotcha.
And so once he gets to the coast, they put the boat in the water and they use that boat to take him out to a pole where he stands for a good long hour plus in what you have to imagine is very, very cold, windy shores. Right. And he's soaked to the bone because it's been drizzling the entire day. And he's just standing out there for over an hour.
And you don't think there's any place where they cut and like just like it's a dummy and you can't tell? Like you think the actor Jude Law actually stood out there in the water for an hour and a half?
I believe so. Yeah.
Wow.
I did see in that scene there is one cut because the guy who's standing next to him,
because it was happening live, right? Like they couldn't do any. Okay.
And I can't tell because like it's on an island, so they probably have a spotty connection. So occasionally, like there was a moment where the it would seem to cut, but you could tell it was like they just lost signal for a second, or maybe they didn't. Maybe it was like an actual cut. They faked it.
Huh.
But the whole thing had a feel of like this is actually live. And I watched it after the fact, so I didn't watch the live stream. I don't know. It was kind of just amazing to see this 24-hour live streamed event, both how they pulled it off and also the links they went to with the actors. Because
how long did you watch this over like a 3-day weekend or something? Like what?
Yeah. I just had it on the background while I was doing other stuff. Gotcha. Except for those moments where like he was digging a hole. I sat there for like 45 minutes watching Jude Law dig a hole
invested
on some island. Yeah, it was crazy. I just never seen anything like it. And it didn't sound like a thing that I would really enjoy, but here I was watching 45 hours of a man dig a hole, or 45 minutes of a man dig a hole. So it was a big surprise for me. I don't know where it belongs on this list. It certainly wasn't as big a surprise as Robert Pattinson.
How about The Walking Dead?
No. As a matter of fact, I think we need to talk about the top two because that's where the real contest is here.
Yep, I agree. And I had already been making the case for Robert Pattinson as Batman like early this year before I'd seen The Lighthouse and Tenet, just based on like, hey, you know what? I've actually seen him in interviews and he seems like he's cool and fully aware that he was just cashing a check for Twilight. That base material is god awful. Like there's no way to like make it cool or good. And I was aware that he also was getting this growing indie career where I'd read multiple reviews. I hadn't seen any of his work, but I heard people from, you know, like Matt Zoller, Seiss or whatever. Like you know, people that I respected saying, wow, this guy's actually, you know, showing that he's got some real skills, some real chops. So it didn't come out of nowhere. But having said that, like that Lighthouse performance again, opposite Chris, the fact that worked at all.
Yeah.
You know, It's as opposite Willem Dafoe at cranked up to 11,
right,
on the Dafoe-o-meter, is pretty amazing. And then Tenet, like I said, I actually thought he was more compelling than Denzel's kid. You know, like, he, of course, he didn't have as much to do. And so maybe I was able to, like, free the, you know, paint on other things to him. But, like, man, that just showed me that he had the action. He could convincingly do, like, really high budget, slick looking action, which is 90% of a superhero movie anyway. So,
right.
Having said that, I was again shocked at how good The Walking Dead was, and how much each time I was looking for, I wasn't like putting it off to the last minute. I was watching. I started because, like, in the last few years of Walking Dead, I would give that show maybe a watch and then put it on the background. And I was doing, because I usually, we did the live show. We did the live stream where we made jokes about it. And then I'd give it one serious watch while I was also taking notes. But, like, this, I would give it a fan watch, you know, like, every, like, it's like, I just watch it just to watch it. And then I would do it a careful note taking watch. And I was really looking forward to it. Did not see that coming. I think it's probably a bigger surprise than Robert Pattinson. What do you think?
Yeah. I'm not as invested. I don't have the history with Twilight that I have with The Walking Dead. If I had been a Twilight hater from day one, it might be more surprising that Robert Pattinson could do something really good. But you know our history with The Walking Dead. If you're a fan of Bald Move, like, we were on that show since nearly day one. It's been years.
We actually were.
Years.
We just didn't release the podcast we did because we didn't like them.
Right. So, you know, the vast majority of Bald Move's lifespan has been saddled with a shitty Walking Dead that we had fun covering and slamming on up until we didn't. It has to be the biggest surprise to see this return to any kind of form. To me, is shocking, because it doesn't seem like AMC has any care in the world for putting people who actually want to do a good job on this show. Time and time again, they have undercut the show. They've put people in place who, if they care about the show, they don't have the skills to back it up. Now it seems like we have someone who cares about the show and has some serious skill. I never thought I'd see the day The Walking Dead would become good again. I thought it was done. And here we are. So,
and starting to really reveal Scott Gimple as being a villain, because simultaneously as he ran The Walking Dead into the ground, Fear the Walking Dead had starting to get a following, and people were like, actually, season three, Fear the Walking Dead's even better than the main series now. And it's like firing on all cylinders. Scott Gimple got tossed off of this and thrown onto the set of Fear the Walking Dead. Fear the Walking Dead instantly went into the toilet, and The Walking Dead got good. And again, this had great synergy with this Chaos on the Bridge, because it's immediately obvious what they did, which is they just went into like, you know what? We don't need to come up with some horseshit zombie of the week scenario, though there were those from week to week. What we really need to do is take advantage of the shared history of these characters. Like, have Daryl and Carol talk about shit, and have, you know, Carol see a little bit of herself in some abused girl.
Finally take serious the fuck, I can't think of the word. Take serious the idea of the show in the first place, which is that the humans are the focus here. The zombies are the backdrop.
And then building the new world and trying to come up with this constitution and what that looks like. And, you know, like, they did a little bit of like what I guess would be called morgalizing, but it actually worked better because, like, okay, Michonne absolutely would act this way with the pressures that she was under. And they had a little mystery with scars we kind of made fun of, but actually that played off in like a really cool way, very satisfying way. You know, one of the hardest things to do is not have a child actor be fucking annoying. They never really were able to pull that with Chandler Riggs until he essentially turned into a man and then they fired him. But like, little ass kicker, Judith was very, I thought, a really well-developed character and had a lot of good chemistry with Negan. The fact that they were able to do something interesting with Negan's character. Very, very, like, and they did some of the, like, there's also, like, they did some really cool stuff with drone shots and location shots and, like, foggy moors of Georgia kind of shots that really felt atmospheric and creepy for the first time in forever. And zombie effects were, they've always been next level and amazing.
That's where they've always put their money, is into the effects.
So they kept strong. All the things have always been strong and fixed a lot of the weaknesses. And it's Star Trek, Next Generation season 3, lean into the characters. Why are the characters doing this? Who is the character both, you know, this situation, how, and then, you know, which characters react to it, spotlight the ones that have the bit. Man, it's just good.
It's also a surprise because, like, simultaneously, while they're making the best choice they've ever made with Walking Dead by putting Angela Kang in charge of the series, they've also made the worst choice they've ever made with The Walking Dead by promoting Scott Gimple to running the whole damn shebang. Like, he's in charge of the Walking Dead properties now, which is absolutely insane. When you look at the pattern of the audience, it has been consistently falling off since Scott Gimple took over. Season after season, the audience has eroded down to a barely passable show at this point. It's wild that you would take that guy and make such a bad decision as to put him in charge of everything while simultaneously putting Angela Kang in charge of The Walking Dead and making it good again. So I don't know. This is a huge surprise to me. I think the only potential argument here, which I don't know that we even want to have, is a third day live stream versus Harley Quinn to round out a top three.
I would say that the Harley Quinn is much less surprising than a 24-hour live stream that they had to do an audible on because of a pandemic. had fucking Jude Law digging ditches for 90 minutes and you stayed invested. Like that's an easy call for it being number three.
Cool. And this has a history of good animation stuff, so it's not a huge surprise.
I'd put Ted Lasso at the bottom. Maybe. I actually put Harley Quinn at the bottom because it's the least surprising thing, followed by The Great. That's I fully endorse this order.
Okay. And of course, Walking Dead season 9 is our winner. Cool.
Yes, sir.
I got one more category for you.
High risk, high reward. All right. You want me to break this one down?
Break it down.
Bill and Ted Face the Music. So high risk, high reward is an example. This is like a perfect example. Everyone had fond feelings of Bill and Ted. Sure.
Certainly like the Bill first Ted. Movie.
Keanu Reeves, like every, you know, his star seems like it burns brighter every year. A genuinely good guy.
Yeah.
Good story. Fun, you know, lots of nostalgic memories, but nobody's out there clamoring for more Bill and Ted. Nobody's out there being like, I wonder what Bill and Ted are doing in the 2020s. I wonder how their family looks. Did they ever form Wild Stallion and save the world? This movie dared to dream. This movie dared to dream that these idiots that kind of love each other and that's about it, could unlock the global peace and harmony. And they don't quite stick to concept or the landing, but it's a lot of fun. And their daughters like really put a lot of like fearlessness and heart into their performances of these people's offspring. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It just kind of worked, man. It just kind of worked. There were some things that didn't, but 90% of it worked, and that's way more than I thought it had any right to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I came away from Bill and Ted Face the Music with really good feelings.
Good vibes.
Unity and just, you know, peace on earth kind of stuff and rocking on, that kind of thing. Like, very good vibes coming out of that movie, and it was funny. I didn't know if Bill and Ted as characters would even work now because they're so dumb. And that was very much like a 80s, 90s skater, California culture, surfer stuff. But like, man, I don't know. They pulled it off. I didn't know if Alex Winters could even get back on screen because I haven't seen anything from him since then. But like, yeah, he showed up. He did it. He did it well.
It took everything like the appropriate level of seriousness.
Yeah.
You know, and it had a lot of callbacks and like, you know, the first 15 minutes of the movie just like legit put a big smile on my face. All the callbacks, the, you know, Bill's hot mom, stepmom, and, you know, the Ted's strained relationship with his dad. And like I said, and seeing them trying to cheat by going, you know, like, oh, why should we sit there and try to write the greatest song ever when just go into the future and steal the greatest song ever from us when we obviously eventually write it? Such a fun concept.
And that's the thing about like the Bill and Ted movies, you know, they're really fucking dumb characters, but the writing in it is actually pretty smart. Like you look at the time travel stuff they were doing in Excellent Adventure and it's good. It actually holds mm-hmm. together. They did the same thing here, right? Like, oh, we go into the future and steal it. Oh, but the future versions of ourselves have already had this idea. And oh shit, we never wrote the song. How can we steal a song that doesn't exist? All that stuff is cool. Yeah. And it works. I like Kristen Schaal, who is in this, plays a not mm-hmm. insignificant character. Yeah, I like it.
It's pretty good. The Star Wars CU, movie cinematic, or television cinematic universe. So this is, I'm going to call premature on this category.
Yeah.
Because it's the high risk, like simultaneously debuting this interlocking 10 different properties structure of television shows that all interlock, self-reference and self-promote. Like, you know, you watch Mandalorian this season and you can see where they launched five different series off of it. You know, the ones we already know, Ahsoka. And you got Cara Dune, Republic Commando. You got Boba, you know, the Book of Boba. We see where these things are going to spin off. And it didn't like torpedo it, but also the Mandalorian's really lightweight and breezy. Like some people got angry at me for this, but I never really took it seriously. I never really expected it to dot its I's and cross its T's. Just remember that, hey, you know, you're Star Wars and we want to see a certain amount of things and have a little bit of heart. And that's all you need. That's all you need in a Star Wars film. Mm-hmm. But this is a huge risk that are there enough people that are going to spend an hour plus, like, you got all of America to show up for 8 hours of your shit in a calendar year on the Marvel Cinematic Universe over 10, 12 years of carefully constructed stuff. Can you get Americans to give you 100 hours a year? And if some Americans are only willing to give you 30, are those going to feel left out of the other stuff? Is it going to make their shows weaker that they're not keeping up with all the other stuff? And that's tough. Like, I've never seen anything attempted like this before. Like, the closest thing I can think of is like traditional comic books, but even then you'd have a summer crossover event and maybe a special limited crossover event for like all the mutants to get together for a 4 or 5 book arc, and that was always pushing the limit. Like, this is the Marvel Cinematic Universe on steroids, and also they're going to do the Marvel Cinematic Universe version of it simultaneously,
right? Yeah, this is Disney's bid to own everything entertainment.
And we don't know if it's going to work or not. I can see a lot of reasons why it would, and I can see a lot of reasons why it wouldn't.
We don't know if it's going to work. I will say the way that they launched it is probably one of the best launches I've seen for something this ambitious. Like, the way that the Mandalorian captured the imaginations of everyone, and Baby Yoda, right? Season one, everybody was talking about it. Season two, it came back stronger than ever. They, like you said, set up so many of these things that they could do spinoffs with, but the way they end season two, and I won't go too deep into it, it is fan service to the nth degree. It's incredible. It took me from thinking like, okay, this show is a little bit of fun, and it has some good moments, to thinking, wow, they just capped this off in a way that I am super impressed with, and I didn't think they had in them. So the launch of this thing is like the highest reward part of it for me, because I think people, based on the strength of the Mandalorian's ending, will tune in to a lot of this stuff, and it's up to those shows to lose that audience, as opposed to like trying to build something from nothing in these new shows.
Yeah. And Disney's always been a little protective and classist when it comes to television versus movies. Like, even when they were doing good stuff on Netflix, like, I really enjoyed Daredevil. I really enjoyed The Punisher. I mostly enjoyed Jessica Jones. And then we won't talk about the Fist
Iron Fist. Yeah.
But, even when I was watching those shows, I was with the knowledge that like Spider-Man's not going to show up, like Tony right. Stark's not even like you're not even going to get like Robert Downey Jr. to walk in a suit like and forget the CGI. You're just not like these are the lower tier. You know, you don't have the Avengers. These are the defenders, you know. Whereas The Mandalorian for the first time showed that the mouse, at least on their own private channel, is going to let the TV shows play with the top shelf toys.
Yeah,
they're going to get, you know, they're gonna, it's like letting your kid sister play with your prize crown jewel collectible toy. Like, are they going to like that shows a lot of confidence that they're no longer going to like, OK, well, there's the main stuff you take seriously. And here's the bullshit that we do for kids and for the fanboys. And, you know, as far as I've been thinking about this a lot, and I'm like, is there enough nerds that will keep a year round thing like this going? And I realize the perfect analogy is sports. Like, it's not uncommon to find dudes that are into baseball, basketball, and football. And if you are mm-hmm. into it at all, you're watching a dozen hours plus of this stuff, and you're watching news about it, and you're talking to your buddies about it. And that maps almost nicely onto the nerd sphere. And also, like, if you think of, like, you know, housewives and, like, soap operas, where they might watch 2 or 3 hours of those per day over weeks and weeks and years, like, if they can tap into that kind of loyalty, and it just so happens that, like, you know, there's a lot more crossover now. Like, it's not uncommon to be, like, really into football and Star Wars. But, like, if they can tap into that kind of passion, you know, where you, like, you know, that kind of identity almost of, like, I'm a Star Wars nerd. I love football. I'm a fan of the Indianapolis Colts or whatever. Yeah, there's almost an infinite appetite for that kind of stuff. So, and they can do it.
They picked the perfect time to try it too, with the pandemic shutting down all of sports and making sports games. Like, it's something I don't hear nearly as much about, right? Because they had to shut down for a while, and when they came back, the sports that did come back,
they're abbreviated, had some troubles, are weird.
Right. It's not, it doesn't have the same feel. And so for Disney to launch what is a all out entertainment onslaught during that particular part where people are stuck at home, can't go to football games, right? Because that's a large part of being hyped for something is participating in it directly. Well, you can still get on the internet and participate with your friends and family about Star Wars. It's a great time to launch this thing. They kicked it off with a bang. I think you're right. It's still premature to really crown this as a victor, but also it's got a good shot.
Yeah. I almost feel like it shouldn't, like, this feels like a category that maybe we just didn't have enough this year, because like what are you going to do? It's like there's the risk, but did it crater or did it succeed? Like, we won't know at least till a year from now, probably two.
Yeah.
Cause like, even if there's an initial amount of excitement, can they sustain it, you know, over the long haul? And it's an open mm-hmm. question, you know, I just don't know. The new Pope. This fits in this category because it's been many years since the young Pope enthralled us. And while the new Pope or the young Pope didn't feel like it was definitively final, it was pretty final. We didn't need a new Pope. And also it's big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
Like, The young Pope had a particular style and aesthetic and cast and things it wanted to say. And one of the most magnetic parts of that was Jude Law. And that motherfucker's in a coma.
Yep.
For half of the season, if not more.
More, a lot more. It's like 9/10 of this season or something.
This is an insane. This was and then you're going to replace him with like a polar opposite. You're going to go to. Yep. John Malkovich, who admittedly was an interesting choice, and I immediately, like, when I saw the trailer, I'm like, okay, I can kind of, this is kind of interesting too. He's completely different than the previous Pope Pius, but and it also, by getting Jude Law out of picture, allowed them to like really build like Cardinal Vuello and Sophia. God damn, Sophia was so good. She's more of a minor character to Esther. Last season, they did some really interesting things with Esther, some like challenging work, like things that, like, I don't even know if I'm agreeing with what the hell I'm seeing or what they're doing here.
But I've never seen anything like it either.
And God, is just so gorgeous. And so, for me, at least, emotionally resonant, and said a lot of things that like I kind of like agree with on the best parts of religion. And it's one of my favorite things that came out last year. It's gorgeous to look at, really thought provoking, funny, very funny in places.
Yeah.
And if they come back with the old Pope, because now at the end of the state of the game, so maybe I'll stop. I don't want to spoil it because I know you haven't seen the last episode and maybe some people want to. But like I they're really set up to do the old Pope if they want to do a perfect trilogy. But you know what? Higher risk, higher reward if they do, because also they left it at a fun kind of definitive place, just like they did last time. So,
yeah, you didn't need this. You weren't even sure if you wanted it, but when you got it, it was definitely worth it. That's kind of the definition of high risk, high reward. And, you know, it's not also on everybody's radar, right? It's like, well, we watched this niche show that not a lot of people watched. But for us, this was high risk, high reward.
Yeah. And it's a super sexy show, too.
Oh, yeah.
If you like watching good looking people do it, you know. And
I mean, the intros did sexy nuns, you know, sexy nuns, sexy dancing with sexy lighting.
And Jude Law shaking his white Speedo covered ass.
His ample buttocks. Yeah.
It's got something for everybody, honestly.
Sure.
What's your sexuality? New Pope's got it.
Yeah.
So, all right. There and then Corona Rice.
Why is this here?
I keep tabs on the world news, and I heard about this coronavirus stuff starting in February. And you know, like this is not the first time I've gone through a worldwide virus panic. You know, had Ebola just a couple of years back. SARS came out. And you know, like the media always covers it as like, oh my God, scientists say it could be this, could be that. The thing is different is like this thing kept on like instead of like, well, scientists say, and then, well, it turns out, you know, whatever, it didn't spread as fast or wasn't as lethal or, you know, blah, blah, blah. We were able to successfully contain it. Like all the grim predictions started coming true and you saw what it did to the Wuhan province of China. You saw what it was doing to like, wasn't it Northern Italy that was hit hard?
Yeah.
Like those shots of like hundreds of people like lying in the hallways, like dying and gasping and people being stored in like fucking box trucks and shit. Like it was like, that was different. That's different, you know?
Yeah.
So in early March, like I started thinking like, God, if this like really hits and overwhelms the hospitals and, you know, I've seen movies like Contagion and things like that. Like what happens to the food supply? And just to make myself feel better, I bought a 50-pound bag of rice from Sam's Club. Cecily made fun of me. Everyone made fun of me. But you know what? We had a whole bunch of potatoes and a whole bunch of canned food and rice. And I knew that like my family could probably ride out a month or two and not having food.
Risk. I mean, the risk here is you spend a 50-pound bag of rice isn't
bucks,
cheap.
I think is what it cost. Yeah, it sure. Cost me $16 for a 50-pound bag of rice.
The risk is, you spend all that money on tons of rice and it goes bad before you can get it. It gets worms in it or something. And it turns out you never needed it in the first place. It's risky, you know?
It's risky. And it led to me buying an Instant Pot and learning like a million different ways to cook rice. And I'm about 75% of the way through that Corona rice with still another 2 months to go.
Yeah.
Before it turns 1 year old. I say it paid off. Cause like I tell you what, those first few weeks in like around March 13th through 15th, where all the store shelves were empty, I started really thinking, I'm glad I bought that fucking bag of rice. Now, turned out that like not even hand sanitizer and toilet paper was that really short in supply. And once you had over an initial panic, but Corona rice, high risk. I really put those $16. I really hung those $16 out way over the edge. $16 ass is hanging way out there exposed. And
yeah. So man, where do you put this stuff? Can I formulate a list here?
First of all, the Star Wars MCU is disqualified.
Yep. Which means so we automatically have a top three.
Corona Rice is a farce. So like you got Bill and Ted and New Pope duking it out.
And I think I feel good about the list as it stands. What do you think?
Yeah, New Pope is a better product, but also like Bill and Ted was like,
it wasn't beloved by the masses, right? By millions. New
yeah.
Pope. So Bill and
yeah,
Ted is.
Like, Bill and Ted had like, in fact, like, and the thing is like, I felt like those movies got better the further back they got in a rear view mirror. Like people are like, you know, hey, let's go watch that stupid movie that probably doesn't hold up. Oh, actually, this is still fun to watch. And, you know, early work by Keanu. Everybody loves Keanu. Like, really, the whole world's in love with Keanu right now. He might be like, he's ready to start a cult if he wanted to. And this could be his first misstep, you know, like remember when John Travolta came back and everybody's like, John Travolta. Yeah, we really like this guy. And then like, oh, wait, he's a Scientologist and he kind of chews scenery. And oh, Jesus, he's a 10-foot tall lizard man in this movie. and now look at him, like Keanu was staring that down. Getting Bill and Ted band back together, getting the Wild Sounds back together. I do think it's number one. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I mean, I'm good with this list here.
I'm good with making this category disappear entirely.
Let's crown it. Let's mark the nominees because MCU's disqualified and we only need top three anyway. We're good. That's it.
Yep. That takes care of
today's topics.
That takes care of our today's topics. Yeah. All cool. Right. Baldi's day one deliberations in the can.